Welcome to König Kunst, the podcast by König Galerie. I am Johann König and I will interview artists and other collaborators we are working with. And the first episode starts with Refik Anadol, who is having a spectacular exhibition here in Berlin at König Galerie St. Agnes. And we will hear now from Refik what this is all about and give you some background info. And please leave a comment and follow us on this König Kunst podcast. Refik, you are originally from Istanbul, right? You're born in Istanbul?
Yes.
Yeah. And you live in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Maybe to start with, you can tell us a little bit about your history, where you come from, what did your parents do?
Yes, so I'm originally from Istanbul, Turkey. I think very traditional start in life was my family is full of teachers. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for my family from many perspectives, but a really beautiful growing up experience and lots of teachers in the family, I think, allow me to like learn how to learn very early. Mm-hmm. So I was always like, you know, you can learn this, you can do this, like, you can find that, you know, why don't you do that? Like, there was always like this, you know, encouraging context was in life. And I'm grateful for my mother and father because they were also very open-mindedly allowed the imagination grow without any boundaries of like classical, job titles. Like they're mm-hmm. not coming from that, you know, be a doctor, an engineer. Like, no, not that kind of type of people. Both my parents loves mathematics, I mm-hmm. think, and both into finance. And so they were like very much connected to like numbers.
Mm-hmm. But they were school teachers.
No, actually, my father was a bank manager and a senior manager.
Yeah.
And then my mother also for the government accounting, so for tax and so on.
Uh-huh.
But they are very like, 9 a.m., 5 p.m., full-time people working.
Yeah.
And my uncle, actually, one of my hero, he's one of the early, he's actually a pioneer in the medicine. Mm-hmm. And he brought kidney transplantation from U.S. to Turkey very first time, a really true nerd, like a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hero, like he's saving life, you know, helping humanity, this figure in the family. And
who were the teachers?
My uncle, my mother's, I guess, five sisters. There are uh-huh. six sisters.
Wow.
And five of them were like a teaching,
yeah.
a sharing, or leading some sort of like education area.
Okay. And you have sisters and brothers too?
No, but I have 14 cousins.
Wow.
Like I think I have 14 sisters and brothers.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So very, very very lovely and very connected family, and very open-minded and supporting each other. That was a very, I think, I'm grateful for the start.
But so no art background in the family. There was no. So how did you get into art?
Actually, my father has a very profound charcoal drawings. Whenever he has this escapism, he was drawing lots of landscapes.
Himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in his actually, I lost him when I was 15 years old. Unfortunately. But he was in his retirement, he focused on puzzles, but like 10,000 pieces, like remarkable pieces.
Uh-huh.
And he was inventing his own like mathematics of how to like cluster puzzles by color, by shape. He was really fast.
Oh, because like you have a landscape of yeah. a mountain valley.
Yeah.
And then you have to, how many pieces?
I mean, he quickly learned how to make up to 10,000 pieces.
Wow. In what period of time?
It was in his last 5 years, I yeah. guess.
And how long did it take him to finish it?
Oh, very quickly. Weeks.
Wow.
Like maybe sometimes a week. We were seeing like incredible amount of like growth. But again, I'm also very grateful for both of them because they bought my first computer.
Yeah.
I was 8 years old.
Wow. What was it?
It was a Commodore.
Yeah. This is how programming coding started, right?
Yes.
On Commodore. Yeah. Yeah.
And the good news, it comes with like a Turkish and English kind of a print inside that allows you to like learn how to make a basic, very basic, like a graphical approach.
Mm-hmm.
But most fun was not that part. We have a very amazing kind of a place in the neighborhood that you can buy any games. Like the curator of that, I guess, game shop was super up to date.
Mm-hmm.
He was so like true nerd,
mm-hmm.
bring all the games on time from
mm-hmm.
US.
Mm-hmm.
And that person also was teaching how to manipulate the game maps. Mm-hmm. Like I was in 9, 10 years old, already learning how to like manipulate the game map, mm-hmm. reconstruct a new map, and so on. I'm addicted to games still.
Yeah,
clinically, I love games. And thanks to them, I guess they never stopped me from using technology or I was the person dreaming with computers.
But it's interesting. So, do you think these chalker drawings and the imagining a puzzle as a representation of nature in somehow bits and pieces, because that's actually what a puzzle is, has an influence on your work?
I definitely think it is. Because, first of all, I mean, what I love about these early days is, first, learning. It was very like another problem. Like if you don't know something's not a problem, you can learn it. So yeah. That was a very important like aspect of like being, just step in and learn it. And second, I guess this puzzle idea was just challenges, right? Like you'd start something like you don't know how to start with it, but you have, you can do that. Like that feeling is really very, I think, inspiring. You have like 10,000 options. You can like sort them in a minute the way you want. But if you have this structure and, some kind of mathematics in your mind, you can achieve much faster results.
Mm. Only that you are using 19 million puzzle pieces to create your work, right? So because, somehow that's also what you don't finish an existing image from pieces, but you take existing images and make a reverse puzzle based on IA algorithms, right?
Wow, yes. Actually, you are amazingly connecting to... It's the first time I'm connecting, by the way, two worlds. Thank you very much. thank you. And honestly, actually, very true. Like, when AI looks at X million amount of images, it just really connects them based on similarities. And I think my father's brain was exactly doing the same thing. He has 10,000 pieces. And in a couple of hours, he was clustering all the colors and the shapes very closely. And he was reconstructing a reality based on that.
Yeah.
It's what AI does.
Yeah, yeah. So when you said you started with computing, when are we there? In the early 90s, mid-90s?
Yes, I was 1992, 1993. It was like the very amazing years. But to be honest, in my high school, I'm very grateful for my mathematic teacher as well. She was a remarkable person. Like geometry was something like a charming and easy and so something like playful.
Yeah,
the like a neuron gymnastic, neuron like a massage. Like
yeah,
and I really enjoy it. But much importantly, I guess, my undergrad years, where the jump from high school to undergrad, I was already like into like a creativity, imagination. By the way, my mom is saying, by the way, it's a very funny memory. I was, I think, 8 years old, the year we got the computer to home. I was complaining about why my room is always the same, and she really got afraid, because I was looking at the ceiling, the walls, and the door, like asking like why this door is always staying, like why this wall is all... And she really brought me to like like a psychology, I think, advisor, and then yeah. it's normal. I think he's most likely in an imagination mindset.
Exactly, yeah.
But I didn't leave that away. It's still in me, like the same idea. When it's a beautiful space, or a wall, or a ceiling, a same pattern.
You remember when there was a shadow on the wall?
Yeah.
How to continue like imaginary drawing
Absolutely.
On the shadow?
Yeah, yeah. I think giving a life to like objects and spaces. Like what else can we do with this, glass or concrete and steel?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this idea of like, can a building dream? Like, can it learn? Or like a machine dreams or hallucinations? Like, I think coming from the similar idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and then... How, after high school, how was the path continuing into the arts?
Very grateful for undergrad years. It was a very, very productive, very exciting university years. And again, thanks to my mentors and heroes and teachers, undergrad was productive. And I learned pretty much every single medium, from 3D design, web design, 2D. Like photography was a very fundamental start, by the way. The very first one was a medium photography, large format photography. I studied like all the heroes from every Magnum photo. So like architectural photography was very important. 2008, while I was in Berlin very first time, I was already very obsessed with architecture.
Yeah.
Like, I am in love with architecture as a whole discipline. But light as a material concept was much inspiring. The idea of saving a memory in time and space, using light as a material in the photography, in a dark room, that's where it tried to click to me. Like light is just beyond, you know, wavelength and particles. It's a form of a memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it clicked in the idea of like...
But what I find interesting is you were only taught in new media.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So no painting, no drawing, no.
And honestly, because of it's our department, there is like a reaction to art. You're designers.
Yeah.
Like you're designers, you're artists. I remember there's like a very, you know, profound discipline, you know, difference. Don't be an artist. I'm not saying don't be an artist, but you're a designer. Like this is like this title.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I'm each of the titles. I just want to be anyone.
Yeah, I agree. I also think these whole categories don't really make sense. Like thinking of Da Vinci, you know, to be kind of bold. But tell me, did you have the urge to draw and paint and collage on things like this?
I think it was a bit computer always. So 2008, the last year in my undergrad years, after learning about photography, 3D design, and visual programming language was a very big change in my mind. I'm not a good drawer or someone like... I'm doing charcoal sketches in a high-level way, but the idea of a generative design, the idea of like a machine and algorithm and data is maybe something we can work with, was a very exciting class. A professor from Helsinki, Korai Tahirola, it was his very first lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like a 3 or 4 people in the class. It was a very, you know, pilot class.
Yeah.
He was teaching a software called Pure Data.
Uh-huh.
This software allows you to use any sensors and make music.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time I saw a proximity sensor sensing in the air and transforming your hand gestures into beautiful line and signals.
Mm-hmm.
It was the moment like... By the way, I think it's the first time.
It's a bit what Google did later with the Google Glass, with a hand glove, which you...
Very early example of it, actually.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I touch something in the air, transform into a line and point and numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I used the term data painting in the class.
Because it was not only audio, it was also visual.
Exactly.
So you were like painting in the space.
Correct.
Yeah.
2008.
With a glove.
Actually, all in the air.
Only because you use a hand and sensors see it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an ultrasonic sensor.
Yeah.
And it just sends the distance, measures the distance from the surface. And then it just knows like how close you are millimetrically. Mm-hmm. And then transcode into like the point and lines. But the sound it makes and the visual it makes was so like incredible. And that's what I just stuck in the idea of like, oh, machine can sense us. Machines can, you know, respond to us.
But I wonder with these things, I understand that the machine, I mean, you do the movement and the sensor visual notice the movement. But who defines what sound or image is created from that?
Artist or the creator.
You like, do it. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. I mean, in any...
And you have a wide range on how to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I'm always inspired by aesthetics. I'm always inspired by like the minimal language of like graphics, coming from the graphic design, I guess, culture, and minimal like maybe archival photography in general.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, because I was always inspired by, you know, Dieter Rams' design philosophy. So like Hilla Behar, like, you know, like I have all these embedded aesthetics in my mind that was already trained, I guess, the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Transforming that disciplines into generative design was really inspiring. Like how you can take that numbers and points and lines and machine-made decisions into aesthetic beauty.
Visualization.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was always like
And enlightenment and philosophy, because these things also remind me a lot about...
Pretty much. Yeah. Schopenhauer, like, I mean, I guess, again, I'm very grateful for late undergrad years again. Like there were certain classes, not necessarily asking you, but if you can have a look at the philosophy in general and especially aesthetics, it just grew up my mind. Like, I mean, very fundamental question, like what does it mean to be a human in the 21st century? Or like Wittgenstein style, like if you are thinking you can already like do it kind of level. Or especially, I guess, visual perception, like Rudolf Arnheim in specific, like where the psychology and perception connects.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I mean, pretty much many early visual perception research was a true inspiration, I can say.
Mm-hmm. So, and then you started, I mean, it's because I'm very interested, you know, myself coming from an art world family, growing up in the, at this time also, sort of very clear hierarchies of what defines the art world, who's in, who's out. I started doing a gallery because I had no other option, really. I wanted to do projects with artists, and that was the easiest way to do a gallery. And then to finance this, it was selling the artworks. I actually avoided the word gallery. But I'm very much always interested in how people then... So I understood how you ended up on this college, right, after high school. And when did you understand that what you were doing is actually art?
Okay, 2008, and actually in Berlin.
Yeah.
It was a very, very amazing talk, actually here in Berlin.
Yeah.
Media Facade Festival, Media Architecture Festival. And in this event, by the way, I was very obsessed with architecture and performing arts and to collide them.
Yeah.
It's very clearly when I merged two universes. And I used my very first installation using light as a material and canvas, contemporary art center as a canvas in Istanbul as a graduation project. And because of this visit in Berlin, I met actually a great lecturer by Lev Manovich. He has an incredible lecture about the poetics of augmented space. And he was saying that when an architect and an artist come together, they can make the invisible world of data signals visible, and it can go beyond poetics, politics of everything. It was an incredible lecture. I still very clearly remember. But I thought like, oh, okay, what can be the data that an architect cannot use? And then the whole world opened up because, I mean, life, I mean, there's Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, heart rate, brain signals, you know, temperature, wind, like all, I remember it's Enlightenment in 2008 in that lecture.
So everything inside and outside the structure, so to speak.
Absolutely. The obsession with architecture, I guess, from the photography as a canvas, all just grew together naturally. But also grateful, 2008. One of my friends also in Berlin, Sebastian Knight, he came to our school for exhibition, for one of the contemporary art exhibition. He trained me a software called VVVV, 4V. Mm-hmm. A very like a Frankfurt and Berlin-based group of people invented this visual programming language. You don't write a code, but you can make really complex things. You know, node-based, meaning visual programming, like buckets are connected based on certain like parameters and some algorithms are hidden behind the box. But if you know how and why to connect things, you can make magic. And that was another like enlightenment. I came back from Berlin, I learned that software, and then the world opened up.
But when someone else uses the software, it has a completely different outcome.
Of course, it's a very personal approach.
Yeah,
your mind, your imagination is the input.
Yeah.
And output is, I guess. Like,
so so maybe you can tell us a bit how you work and how the what the method is you apply, because you work a lot with existing images.
Yes. So I think 2011, when I did my very first data sculpture, I think it was the first in the world, 2011 for Istanbul Biennale, using the sound data from the street, I just find that tangible data, meaning any information, any numbers, kind of sort of a memory, not just a bunch of numbers. By the way, I got some critics saying, oh, like everyone, anything can move this. No, it's not actually. Certain things in time and space, certain sensors, certain memories can only make that movement. Not me, not you. It's the sensorial data or certain data makes it.
And so, but how do you proceed? You record yourself the sound of the street?
It was like actually Kerim Karoğlu, one of my friends for more than 12 years we were working together from Folkven Academy.
Yeah.
And lives in Berlin and raised in Berlin and born in Berlin. And he, one of my wonderful friends, was recording the sound data. And I was turning that sound data into other forms.
Okay.
He was recording the archive.
So he was recording a specific location in Istanbul?
Yes, Isgaz Street, where the protest happened, celebration happened, religious voices happened. It's the heart of the city.
Yeah.
We recorded memories and transformed them into a sculpture.
And how long of a recording?
It was 3 days, 72 hours, nonstop.
Okay, okay. And then it's a wave.
It's a waveform, but using a parametric architecture software was allowing me and the team to transform that data into a three-dimensional object. I mean, again, 2010-11 was very fresh for this idea.
Yeah.
And then same year, I just learned my limitations, I guess, in Turkey in terms of what can be the biggest project can happen.
Yeah.
And around those times, I was very looking for the studio culture, like looking for how can I be a much, not alone, but a team? How can I understand?
Who's better in disciplines than you are? Yeah.
Absolutely. And Artcom, like Joachim Sauters, for example, back in time, I remember, I'm grateful for his all things he left. And there was...
He was at...
Artcom.
Yeah.
He was already like a hero for
yeah.
me. Like,
he went to Stiedelschule, right?
I think so. And yeah. Then, but his studio practice was already amazing, like doing these beautiful kinetic sculptures. And I remember a group of people in London called Field.io were already starting... But also learning Peter Weibel, and again grateful for ZKM, that culture mm-hmm. was really inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. Like early 80s, like sort of early 90s, Jeffrey Shaw, like, I mean, and also Light and Space moment. Like,
yeah.
You know, James Turrell, Don Flavin, Robert Irwin. I was very ready to like move to the next stage.
Yeah.
And
this was obvious that this needs to be Los Angeles.
I feel it's very an honest connection.
Yeah.
With my wife, first of all, I'm grateful to her for 13 years together in the journey.
Yeah, you married, you met in art school.
Yes, at
yeah.
the same, same the school in Istanbul.
Media school.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just challenged her, like, let's go and see. Like, is it LA? Is it New York? Is it Boston? And gratefully, Harvard, MIT, and NYU, and UCLA accepted. And I just look for the, you know, which one is the honest and correct one. And again, oh, wow. grateful.
Because, I mean, also you were, the floor was quite empty, right?
Yes.
Like you were one of the few working in this
yes.
field. Again, back to this recording in Istanbul. So you recorded 3 days of vibrant city noises.
Correct.
And then this plasticized into a data sculpture.
Correct.
Because you have the waves in three dimensions, right?
Yes.
So, and what did you do then? You used www.
Actually, the form funding the form was in collaboration with Alper Derimbos, an architect from UCLA.
Uh-huh.
He just finished his master's degree in architecture, came back to Istanbul, and by the way, we are some of course knowing each other from the city and Istanbul. And he said like, oh, you know what? I just get this MFA, I mean master's degree from the same like this field. And he said like, let's just collaborate. And his help was not only just scripting the data, but transforming into a physical form.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very affordable, first of all, because he studied like this parametric design, meaning affordable materials,
mm-hmm.
ribs of like, you know, CNC cut
yeah.
Things and machine made things. And super quickly we all put together, I guess around like a 40 meter by 40 meter huge facade.
Mm-hmm.
And I was responsible for projection mapping. We used 9-channel projection and a VVV, custom software, where the data real-time projection map to a three-dimensional object.
So you have the facade, mm-hmm. which has a this
three-dimensional
and yep. the facade, three-dimensional facade is directed by the sound.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
The sound transformed to the facade, but where's the images coming from?
There was no actually images are all from the sound data, kind of a visual music. The city sound was yeah. transforming into these generative visuals, lines, points, illusions, like
okay.
a depth effect. Actually, since that project, again, Bernard Zerekse, thanks to him, I was that student, he was challenging me and I was researching these Greek sculptures where we see the relief,
mm-hmm.
the frame idea coming from that project.
Mm-hmm.
2011, mm-hmm. because this obsession of idea, like can we frame an algorithm and data? Was the early idea, but making a 40-meter frame
yeah.
in physical world was yeah. so expensive.
Yeah, sure.
And that rejection...
Then made you turn into the digital... I see, okay.
Exactly.
Because that's also something why we started to have the digital gallery app and entering the digital space, because there are no limitations or the limitations are much smaller than in reality, because you can realize... unbelievable projects in the digital realm, which are very hard to achieve in the real world, which then I always think the digital is also real.
Very true.
Yeah. So I see. And then after this learning, you said, okay, this is way too complicated, way too expensive, too many physical limitations, and moved in creating digital words and images. And then the point is to transform data into visuals.
Correct.
Yeah, which you coined digital painting.
Yeah, data painting.
Data painting.
Yes, it was 2008.
Yeah.
And then 2011, I started using the word data sculpture.
Yeah. Because it's three-dimensional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or at least the illusion is three-dimensional. Yeah. Something at least feels three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Or also large scale, like architectural scale, something that is just not anymore, you know, a wall piece. And then 5 years, I practice data, but my MFA said at UCLA was grateful. Again, Casey Rias, who was my also mentor and now a colleague, he invented a software called Processing, which is a JavaScript-based creative coding. In his class, it was incredible. The only thing I just focused with him was data painting, the idea, can data become a pigment?
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to him, grateful for him, I learned JavaScript and learned how to use certain data sets from the wind patterns, temperature, sound data, which is visual music.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible 2 years. And Christian Moller, thanks to him, he inspired me the public art, the idea of making art for anyone,
mm-hmm.
any age, any background. And Jennifer Steinkamp, her amazing immersive environments was an inspiration.
This was all at UCLA?
Yes. These three very strong mentorship allow me to deep dive in 2 years all these mediums.
Yeah, yeah. And so how did its parallel start? I mean, when did you hear the first time from the blockchain, for example?
2018.
Oh yeah.
One of the collectors of a melting memories, and very weird phone comes from, I think, Zurich. That person still want to be private, very wealthy, I guess, a crypto investor. He said, like, you know what? I cannot sleep without putting your artwork into my digital wallet. Can I do that? I said, what is that? Of course. I mean, you own the art. I mean, I didn't understand what is that, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, what is that? So don't worry. I will erase the name. It's just a feeling. Okay. It's what is this feeling? I just need this artwork in blockchain. Okay, great idea. And then that's how I learned about it. The same day, I researched all day about this idea of minting.
So there was a collector who had bought a piece of you.
Yeah, a physical, like a piece from a gallery.
Yeah. What, a relief? A wall relief?
No. It was a data painting.
Yeah.
And I've, of course, in a USB backed up file.
Yeah. And at that time, signed and numbered with a paper certificate.
Yes. Very classical.
Old school. Yeah. And you kept the registry in your studio that he's the owner.
Exactly.
And if he would lose the certificate, he could reorder it.
But, exactly.
And then he knew about this technology and thought, why not moving this into a public registry where it's like...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he said, like, it's a very personal feeling. It was not like the value. It's a personal urge to do that. That was really interesting to me. Like, what kind of a feeling makes you to put something in a virtual space that is already in physical space, you know? Very interesting psychology.
Yeah, but I think that often has to do with that. People also say, oh, when I buy a video, what do I get? A DVD? What's so special about it? You know, it's like... and I think that's also what drove this market craze is one thing, to have the solidity, you know, the proven, you know, it's a for fact. And then the other part, I think, also is that a paper certificate can be sort of vague, you know, who knows what happens, you know, maybe they lose the registry, maybe they... it's a dispute, it's a copyright dispute, whatever, you know, you rely, it's based on trust. And I think the blockchain takes these trust elements out and just, I mean, in Germany, you can't buy an apartment without going to the registry. Otherwise, it's not valid, you know? So I think it's the same concept of ownership. So he told you about it, and then you started...
Researching.
Yes. And it was, what was it, the Bitcoin blockchain then?
It was actually Ethereum.
Because already?
2018,
okay.
Mm-hmm. I believe 2018 is the year also, like a Super Rare and other platforms were just starting.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I have two great friends. I'm grateful. Murat Pak. Pak is one of these incredible figure in the scene.
From Korea?
No, from that's Turkey, actually. Murat Pak. I mean, back in time.
But it's not Pak.
Murat Pak.
But right? Not Pak. The
Pak, yeah. The Pak is also a very good friend.
But you mean the artist Pak?
The Murat Pak, Aydin Pak also, yes. I think the same person now, like Arklect, who has a platform called Arklect also.
Uh-huh.
Practicing in Twitter mostly, I think on social media. Nobody saw him so far in the world.
Yeah, but you know him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, a good friend.
Yeah.
And again, thanks to him, I just asked him, like, he was practicing 2018, and then it was a very small numbers, always in the social media. Like, I just asked, like, what is this, like? He explained me, and then Beeple, Mike, also a good friend, because mm-hmm. of the same community of digital art. But Pak was very openly described, like, hey, like, this is that, this is this.
So I think it's important to hold on here for a second, because you mentioned that before, earlier and now, it's very much about collaboration and open source and sharing knowledge and,
yes.
and guiding others and be guided.
This is a very, very fundamental culture. While I'm well known, early days, sharing a lot, make my copycats, let me be open, I have copycats, but it's okay. I think it's just about like this sharing feeling. I'm not stopping because I have copycats, basically.
Yeah.
Like the work I'm doing, now I'm seeing several artists trying to do the same thing, which is fine.
Yeah.
Some of them referring, some of them hiding. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, life is a history and ledger is there, so I don't worry about this, but this community has the same vibe, as you said, sharing.
Yeah.
And Murat said, like, hey, like, this is something that, please join me. I was skeptical till last year.
Uh-huh.
Nifty Gateway, the team was really bugging me in a positive way, like, you should do this, like, you're a data artist, AI artist, like, fits perfect. Like,
yeah.
Minting machine dreams and memories is, like, you know, the best concept ever. It's cyberpunk, it's, you know, this subculture. And I said, okay, let's try.
So, but at the beginning, it was kind of a small community.
Super small.
And everybody remote.
Very remote, distant, and nicknames.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know who they are, yeah.
But how did the community exchange on...
During pandemic, it happened. I guess like...
But Twitter and...
Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter is the best location where the worlds collides and emerge. And I'm kind of okay in Twitter. I was more like a social... In Instagram, in general, was mm-hmm. more active. But Twitter was just my machine learning friends, AI community friends, media art friends mm-hmm. was where they are. But suddenly, my filter became just NFTs and mm-hmm. just digital art. I'm very grateful to the team and, I mean, everyone there.
So what did you do with Nifty?
So they just ask for whatever you bring. And last year, during pandemic, we worked with a Renaissance data sets of mm-hmm. paintings, mm-hmm. sculptures, architecture of 1300 to 1600 years. And thanks to the Italian Ministry of Culture, they gave all the data to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we trained AI on these data sets. And I put only 5 JPEG images, mm-hmm. like just to experiment, like,
yeah.
what is this?
Yeah.
And they were only like $1,000, and there was a 5 edition, and there was a 1 short clip video. And I put them online, I put on Twitter, it released, and honestly, it took 1 second, and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 second. And I was just, oh, wow. I couldn't even sell a print for $200
before.
In my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And in 1 second, I made a significant income, and it was very remarkable. And not only the income, 5 minutes later, I had hundreds of friends that I don't know
yeah.
celebrating, enjoying, and congratulating.
And joining you on this journey.
Exactly. Yeah. That feeling of completely online.
Yeah.
Was it remarkable?
Yeah,
and a pandemic.
Yeah,
I mean.
But also it suddenly offered you the possibility to a certain creative independence.
Absolutely, and yeah. after that, like, we did another drop. And by the way, Beeple dropped his piece. Of course, that was a great moment. Then his Christie's piece make another moment. I made another drop. Like, first drop was only $30,000, and the second one was like a $300,000, and then the third one was like a one. Like, it just grew so quickly.
Yeah.
Then, by the way, I am not alone. I am representing my team and studio.
Yeah.
I have 14 people, speak 14 languages, and represent 10 countries. I'm
yeah.
grateful for my team since 2014. And working as a studio, I wasn't in like an art scene. I was a working artist with my team only for technology companies. Like
yeah.
our collectors and our clients commissioned by the tech giants. Like NVIDIA, Intel, Microsoft, Google. Like, I never worked with, honestly, artists or an art institution. I was only working with
And how did that come together? So because you were in the scene, and then the they work in the companies, and there's an open sort of, I mean, there's open source on one level, but also tough competition on the other, no?
Exactly. I think, again, 2016, there was one more, I think, quick breakthrough.
Yeah.
Google invited me as an artist in residence to a group called Artist and Machine Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Group was designing a program to teach an artist how to use AI
mm-hmm.
and profoundly support, mm-hmm. truly support.
Yeah.
That 1 year.
Because they know that artists can achieve something they can't do, right?
Exactly.
So they want to enable artists to lead new ways they couldn't even imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Machine hallucination, the idea of if a machine can learn, can it dream, started in 2016. An obsession that I'm still very enjoying 5 years. And in that residency, thanks to Mike Taika, Kenrick McDowell, and Blaise Agoye-Arcas, I was deep into like AI. Like how a machine learning can work, what kind of algorithms are creative, and how can we apply aesthetics to this, like, no offense, but the boring numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the whole thing started. But by the way, 2011 to 16, that 5 years, I was purely enjoying the raw data mm-hmm. as a signal.
Mm-hmm.
But after 16, I am into the archives, images, memories, collective memories specifically, mm-hmm. like the culture, the nature, the space, the urban, things that doesn't belong to anyone, hopefully many people.
Mm-hmm.
And there where I just learned about AI and this GAN algorithm invented by Ian Goodfellow, Generative Adversarial Network, which is a remarkable algorithm that creates almost realistic results from whatever you give.
Mm-hmm.
An image, almost realistic image. A sound, like almost, like in a text. Like it's an incredible imagination of like how AI can mimic our mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my first NFT also was Machine Hallucination, Renaissance Dreams. And with you also, this amazing project we are right now doing is also a continuation of that 5 years of AI data paintings and AI data sculptures.
And you talked about the collaboration with Google. In what was the result of it, or in what did it end?
Vasif Kortun, a wonderful mentor and a curator from Istanbul, he is running an incredible institution called SALT.
Mm-hmm.
They have 1.7 million documents, a library, cultural archives from Ottoman Bank,
yeah.
and then everything about Istanbul. Beautiful archive. Open source.
Yeah.
Super well-established metadata. Every single image has a 46 rows of metadata.
Wow.
Who took the photographer, the year, the type of machine, location, the reason.
Yeah.
We train an AI with this data.
So you train an AI and the AI crawls all the data.
Yes.
And then transforms it into an imagination in your artwork.
Two types. One was, I obsessed with two things, let's say it like that. One was an image recognition algorithm, which looks at these images and make a clusters based on the similarities,
yeah.
which I'm calling them data universes,
yeah.
using a TSNE algorithm, 2016.
Yeah.
The other one was using GAN algorithm, which is creating almost realistic machine hallucinations,
uh-huh.
which looks like a moving images of like documents that are not real, but they look real.
But so you imagine as if a machine could hallucinate.
Correct.
Yeah, which it can't.
I think with a human push,
yeah.
it can.
Yeah.
There's no conscious model, of course.
Yeah.
It's just like a speculation. It's like a creative tool.
Yeah.
But it can creatively and narrative-wise can generate a hallucination based on a reality of certain images.
Yeah. And then this was, like, as you said, an important breakthrough.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was the first example in the art world.
Yeah.
A first immersive installation truly using an AI algorithm creatively, both real-time, meaning you can interact with the AI, by the way, not just watching a video.
Yeah, yeah.
You can really interact with every single image yourself.
It reacts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I think I found very Borgesian, the library of the Babel context, I love that the idea born in a library. Not in somewhere else,
yeah.
where the knowledge comes from.
And how do you experience the skepticism from the art world?
A lot.
Yeah.
First of all, in my early practice, everyone's just like, I mean, data painting, data sculpture, like, why? And there's all this, of course, why? But also, like, I think the more people understand the hardware, software, systems around us, it's all about that. I think it just got okay. But I always got this question of, I mean, this form can be anything, right? Like, these numbers, people didn't understand that shape is not me.
Yeah.
It's a collaboration with data.
Yeah.
They think that it's just an aesthetic. It's not. That specific form comes from data. I am not the person only.
You're like the framer.
That part took some time for people.
Yeah.
But with AI, things get much interesting. Because now AI was giving me a chance of a thinking brush. A brush that can think, a brush that can mimic learning, remembering, dreaming. Now it's just a different phase of, I think, imagination.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for people to understand that, because AI, I think most people think it's used to not for creative purpose, you know?
Very true.
More for like solving other issues. But for example, here in the gallery now, there's when people come near the building, it's a former 1960s brutalist church.
It's beautiful.
Actually, brutiful. You know, brute for brutalism. So, and there's the tower, and you project on the two sides of the tower, super high definition and very precisely, an animated hallucination, machine hallucination of 19 million open source Berlin pictures.
Yep.
Which are then sort of influenced by the current weather and wind situation.
Correct.
So you have an API to the weather station, which then sends in real time how the wind blows and how the weather is. So 2 days ago, we were doing the tests, and I asked you, how will it look in rain? And you didn't know.
Absolutely.
You didn't know because...
Serendipity.
Yeah. And then yesterday, it was raining in pours. And it was amazing how the reaction looked, because it got so, I mean, it's not possible to describe, you need to see it, but it's like really never the same image, and somehow projecting the past of how many years? I mean, since we have photography, I guess.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So 150 years?
Or most likely.
How old is photography?
I mean, since they got a types, right? All right, very early, like Talbot's, like, I think, studies.
Yeah.
But what is really inspiring what you said is, first of all, I'm extremely grateful. Our collaboration and this location is truly inspiring. Like, as an artist practicing, you know, using architecture as a canvas, having this chance is an incredible motivation. When we talk about this, you know, exhibition idea, when you share the photos of the building, like, I mean, it's just a pure inspiration, first of all, the building itself.
Yeah, thank you, yeah.
And the tower was so extremely excitingly waiting to be a sculpture. Like, it's kind of a sculpture in its own
true form. Yeah.
When we use, we have a six-channel projection, and it perfectly covers this tower, and we have a custom software developed in VVVV.
Yeah.
It listens to API real time, every minute updates the wind patterns of Berlin, specifically the wind speed, kind of a direction, temperature, humidity, rain are the main focus. And the AI part you mentioned is the Berlin nature, meaning the trees, the flowers, the parks, whatever the Berlin means for an AI's perspective of nature.
Yeah.
All the colors come from there.
But not the city?
Not the city.
No.
It's the nature.
Because nature.
The whole focus of the exhibition is
but
the
AI nature. Can recognize.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
We create a pigmentation from the Berlin nature, basically.
Yeah.
And then this tower is dreaming this new state of pigmentation. And
especially good for the wintertime. You know. For
brings color to Berlin.
For the dark times. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this, first of all, the Winds of Berlin, the wind data painting started almost 2012. Very much how Monet inspires, like water lilies, right? How he inspires from the atmosphere. It's a similar idea. Like, can we record a pigment from the life, from nature? Like, can we quantify wind as a poetic pigmentation? That's like the idea coming from. So it was in Istanbul, in Miami, in Boston, Chicago, Dubai, Seoul, and now in Berlin. Mm-hmm, I love the city and its context in the nature.
So in Dubai, you work with the desert?
Yeah, it was actually very interesting that the because the humidity changes a lot, the daytime and nighttime changes. This makes, by the way, I'm using three type of algorithms in my body of work. One is a noise algorithm, which is a basically permutation of numbers that makes almost realistic mountains, ocean or clouds and so on. The second one is fluid dynamics, which is used in optical flow algorithm, used in solving fluid dynamics in mathematics. And lastly, I guess, this height mapping, meaning like giving a three-dimensional behavior to a realistic form. So we all merge these ideas in one beautiful installation.
So, and when you come inside the gallery space and go upstairs, at the end of the big exhibition hall, there's a 10 by 10 meter screen, and there is another NFT of five chapters. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on what we to expect there.
So first of all, I think this is, I will say, one of my most excited pieces at the moment. Not only the scale, but the location. I think it just remarkably fit in a very, you know, divine place. A kind of AI church, a place where AI dreams nature. There's some profound, sublime feeling that I'm very grateful for this specific location and collaboration. I think when we go there, we will see an illusion of a box that is just a white nothing, a frame. It always fills with data, machine, dreaming, nature. For this project, we recorded 300 million nature focus photos. Starting 2018, last 3 years, imagine every single national park, ocean, important locations, clouds, flowers, trees, fungi. We just...
Also underwater, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sunset, sunrise, like a remarkable moments in nature that...
Jungle, forest.
Yes. And then we just train this AI and then make this experience. So what we are watching is a 20 minutes audiovisual, I guess, data sculpture. Takes over the peripheral vision of the audience. And multiple channel sound allows you to go immerse yourself. I feel like it is a living sculpture concept kind of in a church, like where you're, like, you know, in near future, like a cyberpunk. But a positive one. It's a very optimist one. Very openly. I think we have enough problem in the world. I'm just not here to bring another problem. I'm here, like, to bring the beauty and aesthetics. And that was the feeling. When you go there, you're just captivated by an AI dreaming nature. This is an algorithm that I've been obsessed last 5 years, started in 2016, using an again algorithm. This one is, by the way, by NVIDIA. I'm grateful for also NVIDIA researchers, specifically Jaco. He's from Aalto University in Helsinki. We have been very closely working with this AI algorithm last 5 years, trained 100 of them last 5 years. And more than 5 petabytes of raw data have been used. It's an ongoing research.
And the and how does how are the five chapters defined?
Each chapter explores one AI model, meaning one was epically researched landscapes, one was focused on flowers, flora systems, specifically from the Smithsonian archives. There's an incredible 18,000 species defined by the scientists. We literally download all of them, like every single flora system ever invented, I guess, or found.
Like from Goethe to in color.
Every kind of exists in the scientific books. 70 million flower photos. We have trees, specifically, like a tree-focused chapter, and water, like a specific ocean, lakes, and beautiful scenery. In each chapter, an AI dreams one of them. One of those AI models inspires a data pigmentation. This hallucination of watery fluid dynamics appears and disappears in our conscious or subconscious reality.
And you mentioned before Monet, and because I thought that it was quite interesting with in the lockdown and the rise of the finally more appreciated digital art through its NFT blockchain technology, which I think still the art world hasn't understood what other possibilities are there. and we will soon see. There were some critics and some writers making this analogy to the Impressionists. Because as far as I understand, they were quite ignored from the Salon Parisian school, and they sort of wanted in, weren't allowed, and then they started to revolutionize the understanding of art back then. I can somehow, how do you relate to this? And is it a bit difficult to generalize because you guys are all so different? When I think also of Biepel and Puck, and there's I don't see so many parallelities.
Very, very great actually analogy. I think for me, art is humanity's capacity of imagination. I think it's my role to push my imagination to the edge. And on that edge, it's technology. And it's impossible to like separate, for me, these two together. And I think minting a machine's dreams and memories to a blockchain, it's just another canvas. It's another act of imagination. But I guess it's so timely. It's not anymore science fiction. It's a real. And that just, I think, makes people probably like surprised. But in the meantime, you're right. I think the art world may be slowly digesting certain things. And maybe that's the speed of digestion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe to come to a close, to refer to the pieces we also show, which are, I think, 9 screens.
12.
12 screens grouped,
yes,
in...
triptych of 4.
Of 4, yeah. So 4 triptychs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm also very grateful for this part because AI data painting, a term I coined in 2016, I'm grateful together bringing this to Berlin as well. They are individually enjoying this AI algorithm in a 77-inch ultra-unique TVs, a digital canvas, or mm-hmm, more like, mm-hmm, honestly.
And they are OLTV, OLD, LG OLDs, right?
Yes. Yeah. And again, I think it's one of the best at the moment screen that we can get the most profound color depth. If data is a pigment, I think that is one of those amazing canvas. Like it's a gesso. It's here. Is the, you know, the embedded technology here.
Yeah.
So I think I'm really excited about the people's reaction, but I feel dimension, patterns, and it's really very rich and very realistic experience.
And also they are grouped by flora, fauna.
Yes. Yeah. Flora, trees, landscapes. As like each AI theme is individually explored as triptych. Like in the big piece, in the 5 chapter. And here we are also exploring similar themes in the form of a data painting.
Great. Thank you so much, Refik, for taking us on this journey. And thank you for this beautiful exhibition and the more projects to come.
Yes, I'm extremely grateful for this collaboration. And thank you for trusting and starting this amazing journey. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to König Kunst. Please follow us wherever you hear this podcast, and please also follow us on Instagram. Please come visit us at www.konig.art.